welcome you all to today's edition of All Sides Weekend, where we talk about books. This is something that I always look forward to, and I always look forward to welcoming my guests. Cassie Rose is WOSU's book critic and a book maven, and she is the proprietress of the blog
TheLongestChapter.com. Thank you
and
very much.
The reason I wanted you to introduce your own blog is A, I forgot it, and B, happy birthday.
Thank you very
happy
much.
Birthday.
Happy
birthday. We're going to sing to you later. And Kevin Griffith is professor of creative writing, poetry, and overall genius at Capital University, who is now teaching summer school. If you're listening and you're his student, turn the radio off and study. Oh, actually, you get credit for listening to this.
That's right. Extra credit.
And we hope shortly to be joined by Julia Keller, who is the author of a mystery called A Killing in the Hills that I enjoyed very much. Listeners will remember her from her days at the Columbus Dispatch, and she later went on to the Chicago Tribune. It's my understanding now that she is writing novels full-time and is based right now, I think, at OU in Athens.
She's also teaching, I think, at Scripps Howard.
Okay. And somebody will tell me when Julia Keller is on the phone. Until then, Cassie Rose, since it's your birthday, we're going to ask you to begin recommending a book and also urging people to call with their own recommendations and comments. But Cassie Rose, happy birthday, go.
Thank you very much. I'm going to recommend Karen Joy Fowler's We Are All Completely Beside Ourselves. And isn't that an awesome title? It's a book where everyone who is talking about it has to say in the beginning that I have to give a little something away that she doesn't reveal until about page 75. But in essence, the story opens up and the narrative says in the middle of her life, and you learn that she's studying in Davis, University of California, Davis. She is looking back to Indiana. Her brother left when she was just a little girl. He left in high school. Her sister is gone too, so you really don't know where the story is going. Her father is a science professor in Indiana. All along as you're reading this, you're knowing something is up, something is funny about the sister. And I thought, as I was reading it, I thought, oh my gosh, this is going to be a book about being, murdered or kidnapped or something. Well, about page 75, she reveals that her sister is or was a chimpanzee.
Her
professor father has engaged in this study of raising Rosemary with a chimpanzee. So they're raising a chimpanzee as a human. One of the hilarious moments in the book, too, is when her mother has to talk to Rosemary about going to kindergarten. She says, because Rosemary becomes very chimp-like. So she says,
I guess she would.
So she says, you cannot, you can't stare fixedly at someone else's cupcake. You cannot put your fingers in someone else's mouth or in their hair. You cannot jump on the desks and the bookcases. Mm-hmm. There is that level of humor in this book. Well, she takes us in and out of the past and all the stories and the growing up, and you wonder all along, where is Fern and what has happened to Fern? Because Fern was taken away and was when Rosemary was very little. So it's entirely engaging and very funny, and the narrator has great wit, and it is one of those books you do not want to put down. So if we're going to talk about beach reads, this would be one of them. And I would highly recommend it. I have 15 pages left, and I was sitting in the parking lot trying to finish it, and I thought I'd miss the show.
Karen Joy Fowler, do you know her from anything else? Is she a new writer to you?
No, she's very well known. She wrote the Jane Austen Book Club, which was very popular.
Yeah.
So this is a very unique book, and someone could say it's a different spin on the dysfunctional family, but you don't get that sense of it because really at the heart of it, it is about how we use animals for experiments and how people, though during that process, can bond with the animals. It's about cruelty. It's about, but that's the gentle, not the gentle, but the harsh underside of it. And Karen Joy Fowler handles it very well because she presents it, some of the tough stuff you really have to read because of what happens to Fern, but it doesn't overwhelm the story.
Well, Cassie Rose, I mean, you certainly have gotten nuts off with a bang here. And I was just thinking when you said that the Jane Austen Book Club became a successful film, I defy anyone to film this novel.
Yes, yes, that would be hilarious.
It probably doesn't need to be filmed, but there you go. I'm wondering if Julia Keller is with us.
I am indeed.
Oh, actually, terrific. Thank you, Julia Keller. Welcome to All Sides Weekend
you.
Books. Now that we have our confusion settled down, I gave a bit of a an intro to you, but I want to let you speak for yourself a bit. I know A Killing in the Hills is your book from last year, which I enjoyed very much, and you have a new one coming out. Is that right?
Right. It's the second in the series. It's called Bitter River, and it will come out September 3rd, same setting in the Appalachian Mountains. But before I go on about me, a topic which is endlessly fascinating to me, of course, I have to say, I think they already did film that, the book you're mentioning, and it's called Rise of the Planet of the Apes. I'm not trying to be silly, truly. I mean, the idea of, you know, raising the chimpanzee within the family. Mm-hmm. I will say, though, in defense of Cassie's lovely and lyrical description of the novel, mm-hmm. that it is not so much the plot, but in the way it's rendered. I mean, mm-hmm. that's what's beautiful, is the beauty of the language. And often we get kind of caught up in plot. I'm reading a novel right now, The Shining Girls by Lauren Bukes, which is a big international bestseller. And I'm going to tell you the hook of it, and you're going to say, roll your eyes and say, oh, she probably sat there and thought, what's going to sell? It's a time-traveling serial killer. But I have mm-hmm. to say, that has really nothing to do with the splendors of the book. The book is just beautifully written, with just lovely visceral detail, granular detail about life throughout the 20th century. So to say the plot, as I said, I didn't mean to sound really snarky about the book that Cassie selected. I mean, I do think the raising the animal within the family as a child is a well-known plot, but not the way that Karen Joy Fowler does it. So it's
that's correct. And it's also very much the narrator's voice. She is at times self-deprecating. She's very observant. She has a thing with vocabulary. She uses, as a little girl, big vocabulary words. She has a cynical view sometimes, an ironical view sometimes. And you love her. You want to be carried through the story with her.
So what you're saying is the story has, an absurdist patina to begin, but she writes it in a very convincing way, so you're taking it immediately. Do you have the sense that you're reading a book about somebody pretending to be a chimp, or does that even become relevant?
That doesn't even really become relevant. It really becomes, for her, she realizes as people are looking at her that it's somewhat of a disability. She has to turn back on herself, because her behaviors are to chatter on, or her mother will say to her, you know, you can't get, you know, excited over tasty food. You know, but that's a little part of it.
Right.
And
right.
I think that Julia is correct in saying that it isn't that plot, which is endlessly fascinating in itself, but it's the details of all of the characters, of the place, of also the science projects that her father engages in and how it affects her.
I would say I did take one minor offense, Cassie, when I was listening when you said, and you think it's a murder or kidnapping, and it's not, is if that might be kind of a detriment to a story. And I have to say, as a writer of crime fiction, I think that we sometimes ghettoize a genre, like say there is a plot that does involve murder or kidnapping. And for my part, when I began to write fiction a couple of years ago, I realized crime fiction was indeed my favorite to read and where I wanted to write, because I think crime fiction today is among the very best that we have, that's where a lot of our social and class and commentary comes from today. Books like Dennis Lehane's Mystic River, which is the best depiction of race and class anywhere, and yet it is a murder mystery. So I would just say, on behalf of crime fiction, that I think it can really rise to a higher form and do anything that literary fiction can do, and also be quite captivating to readers along the way.
Well, actually it is, and I agree with that. The reason I said it was because that is a more common theme. It doesn't mean that it's less interesting, but it, as one is reading, you think that the book is going to take you to a certain place, and that is the beauty of this, is that surprise, that incredible twist of where she is going and her subject matter.
I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend Books. My guest is Julia Keller on the phone. Cassie Rose is here. And Kevin Griffith, we have to hear from you a little bit, because you have a very intriguing title about stalking a creative writing professor, that being you. Go.
Well, just to spin off what Julia and Cassie were saying there, too, the first thing you say in a creative writing class and is, you know, there is nothing new under the sun. But everything old becomes new in the eyes of a certain perspective, and that's what you have mm-hmm. to do. That's what you have mm-hmm. to render for your readers. And we'll make a segue from that to a creative writing professor who had a plot that he probably didn't want to write down. This book is by James Lasden, a novelist, a poet. It's called Give Me Everything You Have on Being Stalked. It's a short book, very light on its feet. I'd recommend it. It's a very creepy book, too, because it talks about how quickly your in the world of online media, social media, your reputation can be almost wiped out by someone with just a little skill, a little technical skill. What happens here is, this is a true story. He has a very promising young student in one of his classes. He takes her to his agent. The agent seems to like what she's written, but doesn't want the book. The next thing you know, he's getting very threatening emails from her, but not threatening enough to bring in the police, because the technical definition of a stalker, in which the police would come in, someone has to make sort of repeated long-term violent threats against you. These are more sinister because they're subtle enough so that he really can't enlist the help of the police. He does. He enlists the help of a Brooklyn detective who calls her up on the phone. She's living in California. She moves to California, calls her up and says, you got to stop these. But then she makes some claims, and he doesn't know what the world of creative writing is like, that novelists can have temporary positions at various universities. So he starts asking him questions like, well, isn't it true that you didn't last at Princeton? You left there for what reason? You know, not knowing. And it gets deeper and deeper.
It's creepy.
It is. It's very creepy. One of my favorite, he lists a lot of emails that she sent. This Nazreen is her name, obviously a made-up name. But one of the emails, some of the emails are a little bit both disturbing and kind of funny. But here's an email from her to him. You type up in your boring, trying to be white style. You're the downfall of a culture. Go back to England. We don't want you here. We rule now. Your ways are over. You're all dying off. Get a toupee. Boy, talk about a stab to the heart there.
That's what a man would really.
I know she knows how to. She knows how to punch below the belt there. But it's a fascinating story. Even if you're not interested in the field of creative writing, just how easily she's able to distort his Wikipedia page, distort his social media. This is incredible.
But this is a nonfiction book. I mean, I was intrigued when Julia brought up crime fiction, and I think that would be a fun topic for our next segment. But what you're talking about is not a novel.
Yeah, no, this is really bad. I mean, she steals his identity. She makes up a bunch of email addresses with his name and then sends it to, like, Hummer dealers. And Hummer dealers show up at his office claiming that they contacted him because he was interested in a Hummer. It's just terrible. It pretty much ruins his life. And at the end of it, you realize there is no closure. She's still doing it today, there's no way he's been able
to
stop it.
Don't give it away. Say no more. We have people already on the phones waiting to participate. Hang on. I thank you for waiting. Hang on 1 second. We will be back after a very short break. This is All Sides Weekend on 89.7 NPR News.
This week on Radiolab.
It's about pain and the body.
The imagination.
Faith.
I know. You've healed me so many times at so many different things.
Leave now in Jesus' name. Back won't be straightened in Jesus' name.
We've all heard stories about how faith heals.
Lo and behold, she was healed.
This week we wonder, how does that work?
There is a way that mommy's kiss is kind of a placebo effect.
Saturday at noon on 89.7 NPR News.
Support comes from N2S, presenting acoustic guitarist Tommy Emmanuel in concert at Capitol Theater on Saturday, September 21st at 8 p.m. Tickets available today at the Kappa box office and Ticketmaster.
The WOSU Member Card Benefit of the Month for June is the Wexner Center for the Arts. Enjoy 2-for-1 admission to the galleries all month long. Visit WOSU.org.
We are back, All Sides Weekend Books. I'm Christopher Purdy. Julia Keller is with us from the phone. Her new book coming out is Bitter River. She is the author of A Killing in the Hills. Cassie Rose is here, WOSU's book critic, and Kevin Griffith from Capital University. And we've had several people waiting on the phone. I want to get to Michael in Gahanna, who has a recommendation. Hello, Michael.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I'd like to recommend The Foundation Trilogy by Isaac Asimov. I think it's a great beach read because it consists of little individual stories that make up a continuum. But it's great for reading something and having a conclusion and then heading home after a time at the beach.
Give us a little bit of a quick synopsis.
It's basically one of the first science fiction stories, and it basically was in the 1950s, so atomic energy plays a pretty big role, and it's really one of the seminal science fiction novels that kind of kicked things off.
Well, we'll look forward to that as a beach book for the science fiction-minded, of whom there are many. Thank you very much for that call, Michael. And Mark in Bexley has been waiting patiently. Hello, Mark.
Yeah, I want to recommend a book called Hitchhiking with Larry David, and it's by Paul Dolman. It's a very short read. It's a bit of a diary of an entertainment industry wannabe who decides to go back to Martha's Vineyard to visit the parental homestead, and he decides to hitchhike around the island, and the first one he runs into is Larry David, the writer of Seinfeld and Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Deeply neurotic professionally, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's this first ride with Larry David that forms the basis for his further adventures around the island. He's going back with a little bit of trepidation because he was not on a good relationship with his parents, but it's a funny book. It's a fairly deep book, but with a lot of humor, and it's a very, very short read.
That sounds like a great summer read. Thank you so much, Mark, for the recommendation. I should put the phone number out there. I haven't even done that yet. We've already had a lot of calls. 292-8513 is the number to call if you'd like to join the conversation. You can also send us an email, allsides@wosu.org. Again, 292-8513. Alan from Clintonville is on the line. Hello, Alan.
Good morning. I just wanted to mention the passing of what I think is just super New York Times bestselling author Vince Flynn. He wrote on terrorism. He died of prostate cancer this week at age 47. But he wrote Term Limits was one. The American Assassin was another one. But if you're into terrorism type fiction books, he was a great author, Vince Flynn.
Yeah, he's very popular. Mm-hmm. We see him at the library a lot. We see him on display a great deal. Thank you very much for that recommendation. Appreciate hearing from you, Alan. We're waiting to see if we can get Julia Keller back on the phone. But she did bring up crime fiction, and she did bring up Dennis Lehane, and we've all discussed it. He's been on the show, sort of. We had an interview with him, and he's a great favorite of mine. So anybody have a favorite crime fiction?
Kevin? I was going to say, she's exactly right that much of crime fiction rises to literary status, and it's unfortunate that it's tagged as genre fiction and not literary fiction. One of my favorites is Henning Mankell, the Swedish crime fiction writer, and I think his first novel that was translated into English, which is called Faceless Killers, I'd put that on the top 10 of my favorite novels. And we read crime fiction. All crime fiction is pretty much the same. Mm-hmm. Someone dies, right? It's Hamlet, right? Someone dies, and you got to figure out what to do about it. And what we love about crime fiction is the main character, usually the detective or the protagonist. And much of Henning Mankell is just identifying with his detective, Kurt Wallander. Kurt Wallander, and a lot of it is just scenes of Kurt Wallander sitting looking at his laundry drying or something and just, you know, sort of identifying with that existential despair that he has. So I would agree. It's wonderful. And I love reading really high quality crime fiction. I think that's where the best prose stylists are as well.
There is a terrific bookstore in New York City called The Mysterious Bookshop, and it's in the Soho or Tribeca, I think it is. And when I was in New York in April, it was just my jaw dropped open because they had so many terrific books. And not only did they have them, U.S. editions, but they also had the British editions there for collectors who want the real first edition. So Kate Atkinson's book, Life After Death, I think it's called.
Life After Life.
Life After Life, that's it. They had both the American and the British, which had different book illustrations or cover illustrations on them. But what I also loved was that they have a terrific website. You can also get on their weekly emails, so they send out their recommendations. And they have very interesting book clubs so that you can sign up for of different aspects, like whether the protagonist is the detective or, like in Julia's case, the prosecuting attorney, or you know what levels that you like. And you can sign up for their book clubs, and they will automatically send you a book of their choice. release every month.
It's a great idea.
Mm-hmm. I think it is, too, especially if you're trying to get into the genre. And also, again, it's not just one. They understand that there are many different types of crime fiction, the noir level of it. The mm-hmm. And so they will... They've discerned those levels for you so that you can sign up for the book club that fits.
Let me put the call out there to our listeners for your favorite crime fiction that would be a great sort of gripping summer read. 292-8513, allsides@wosu.org. And while we're waiting, Kevin, I'm always intrigued with the stacks of books you bring in. A lot are from the local library, meaning they're accessible to all for free. Mm-hmm. So choose one. I think you and Cassie had the same title.
Yes,
I always like it when that happens.
I'll start and Cassie will follow. Speaking of crime fiction and people who sort of straddle the boundary between crime fiction and literary fiction, Jess Walter. Jess Walter has written numerous novels. He wrote Citizen Vince, which was basically a work of crime fiction about organized crime. His latest book is a collection of short stories called We Live in Water by Jess Walter. We Live in Water. Fantastic collection of short stories. Expected topics initially, but they don't go where you think they're going to go. The first short story in the collection, Anything Helps, is just fantastic. It starts out about a homeless man. Oh, well, whoop-de-doo, right? We've all read short stories about homeless man. That's really typical. But in this case, there's this great scene in the short story where this guy approaches the homeless man and says, you know, I'll give you $20 if you tell me honestly what you're going to do with it. And he says, well, I'm going to go buy the new Harry Potter book. And the guy says, no, you know, that's real funny, but I'm not going to give you. So he makes up a long story about how he's going to use it to buy vodka, et cetera. But he really does go and buy the new Harry Potter book because it turns out he has a son who he hasn't seen. And the son wrote him a letter about wanting the book. It's a beautiful, wonderful story. And the last scene in the story is him reading aloud to himself, it turns out, the first part of the last Harry Potter novel. It's fantastic, and there's a wide variety. There's a crime fiction story in here about a man whose father was killed by the mob and how he recalls that. There's a story about zombies. Again, zombie fiction all over the place. This is really interesting, zombies working at Starbucks and how the customers have to be very patient with them. And
if you're going to raise
thing.
A chimpanzee, why
yeah.
not have
a zombie? Yeah, exactly. So We Live in Water, a slight work, but a very rewarding work. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We have a caller. Anna is on the phone from Columbus with a recommendation. Hello, Anna.
Hello. I was going to recommend the book Back Home because it is a book, a young adult book, and it teaches children about how its life isn't always going to be easy. And how you're going to have to hurt, you're going to have to go through pain to reach the top.
It's called Back Home?
Yep.
Okay.
It's actually by Julia Keller.
It's by Julia Keller. Oh, that's good to know. Thank you very much for that. Anna, you got your radio on, which is making it harder for us to hear you.
Okay,
but we do appreciate the recommendation, Back Home by Julia Keller, which is a young person's book recommended by a young person. Thank you, Anna, very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call. That's very nice that we had a young person calling us. I mean, when I see people, you know, under 80 when I'm out, I'm happy.
Well, and
what do you have for us?
I will keep with the young adult theme here and recommend a young adult novel called Codename Verity by Elizabeth Wine. This won the Edgar Award for the best young adult fiction. And it's really it's borderline almost more adult than it is young adult. In fact, I was carrying it with me in a restaurant and a woman stopped me and she said, "Don't you love this book?" And I said, "Yes, I do." And then I had to quiz her about how she came to reading it. But it takes place in World War II. It's about friendship. It's about sacrifice, about loyalty between two teenage girls. One of them is a pilot. And of course, that was during a time when young girls or women did not have the jobs that we have now, and certainly not flying planes, but she is the one who is transporting a lot of the British soldiers to France, and her best friend becomes involved in espionage, and they have a mission which goes wrong, and the book opens with Julia, who is codenamed Verity, who is in the captivity of the Nazis. And they are saying to her, for your life, you need to confess to us and tell us what the wireless codes are and where a lot of the British airfields are. So we are getting her written confession, really her written treason. And it is to the testament, again, of the author, who is doing a phenomenal job of layering, taking you in one direction where you think you're going, and then another thing happening. And it is a terrific ending. It is a surprising, shocking ending. And as an adult, I got very involved with it. Now, as an adult reading young adult fiction, you have to realize that the hook there a lot of is about emotions are what drive the protagonist, less than rational adult thinking. But Codename Verity... Pardon?
Good.
Yeah, right. So Codename Verity by Elizabeth Wine, I would recommend it for if you're going on vacation and your kids are going with you, to take this along and encourage them to read it or to read it yourself.
Terrific. We have a call from Rita in Columbus with some recommendations. Hello, Rita.
Hi, yes. Good morning. Yeah, you were asking for recommendations for crime fiction, and there are two writers I could recommend. One is Susan Hill, who was the author of A Woman in Black. She writes horror fiction as well as crime fiction. But I really enjoy her Simon Surrailer detective series. I think that's how his name is pronounced, Surrailer. He's very contemporary, and she writes very contemporary crime fiction stories, and he's a rather flawed character, which makes him more interesting.
Interesting, yes.
Yeah, and very intelligent. She really has a knack of getting into the psychology of her characters. And another recommendation would be for Jo Nesbø, who's an author of Scandinavian fiction, and I just finished listening to a recorded book of his called The Leopard, which is fascinating. And he's created one of the great, I think, modern detective characters in fiction, Harry Hole. And yes, it's pronounced Hole, not Hole.
Hole, Hole, okay.
Okay, but yeah, he's a very flawed character, too. He's like postmodern Sam Spade, but instead of liquor and cigarettes, it's drugs for Harry Hole. But he's a fascinating detective.
Jo Nesbø, now, I've seen that. He's all over the place. He's being very well marketed here, so you're saying it's worth a good read.
Oh, yes, okay. And if you can, find the recorded version.
Yeah, sure.
And I'm going to try over the summer to look back on his previous entries into that series and catch up.
Rita, thanks so much for the recommendations.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling. Kevin, you gave a little recognition. I think you've mentioned Jo Nesbø on the program before.
Oh, I've loved Scandinavian fiction. I haven't read Jo Nesbø, though. I should probably do that, given that recommendation. If you're looking for good, really good crime fiction that's just come out, I must recommend passionately Richard Lange. Richard Lange started off as a literary writer of short stories, and now he's shifted to crime fiction. His latest novel just came out like last month. It's called Angel Baby, and this is one of the fastest reads and most interesting reads you'll ever encounter. And the protagonist is a female. Her name is Luz, L-U-Z, and she is the wife of a Mexican mobster. One day she just decides to escape. She steals all of his money, heads out, and of course you can see what follows. She's pursued by a hitman who's also a complicated character. His name is Geronimo. He's been in prison, but he has a family as well. He's tried to get out of crime, but he has to do this one last favor to get out of it. You'll learn a lot about the politics of immigration and border patrol along the border there in Mexico. And Richard Lange is an excellent prose stylist. He knows how to tell a story, and he knows how to leave everything out that needs to be left out, and the prose just crystallizes around the story, and you can lose yourself in it. This is a great beach read and a fantastic work of crime fiction, Angel Baby by Richard Lange. I'd highly recommend it.
And we have a recommendation. Tom from Westerville is on the phone. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I'd like to recommend anything by Stuart McBride. That's Stuart with a U and a Mac, M-A-C. He writes about a detective sergeant with the police in Aberdeen, Scotland, and his lesbian, salty-tongued boss, Inspector Steele. There are eight or nine in the series, and they're great crime mysteries, and they're also very funny, very humorous.
That sounds great. I may be off to the library in about an hour for that, Stu. Thank you so much, Tom, for that call. I appreciate the recommendation. 292-8513. That's a 614 area code. 292-8513 is the number to call if you'd like to join our talk about books today on this edition of All Sides Weekend. You can also send us an email, allsides@wosu.org, or find us on Facebook.
One of I was going to say, one of the things he mentioned, that the detective inspector, a lot of crime novels, you have the detective inspector or it's the policeman or there are police procedurals. And I could never figure that out. That was why I had a conversation with another bookstore owner. It was Partners in Crime that was in the West Village, which is unfortunately closed now. And trying to get some direction and understanding about crime. There is mystery crime. There is police crime. There is detective crime. There is noir crime. And
my favorite are the ones written by the dead people, by the victims. You know, as a sort of like they're telling you what happened to them. I think the Virgin Suicides was one of the Lovely Bones, Alice Siebold, which you recommended.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. You have a very intriguing cover there. I'm attracted to covers.
One?
Yes, Snapper.
Snapper. This is a debut novel by Brian Kimberling. And it's a terrific read, very light reading, takes place in southern Indiana, the real southern Indiana, not of the Amish and the Turning Leaves, because Kimberling grew up there. And his main character, and I think this is semi-autobiographical, but his main character after college gets a job as a bird watcher. He's not a birder, and he's up at 5 o'clock in the morning going through all the woods trying to track the location of nests and also looking into the migration of songbirds. And this really is a chapter after chapter sort of Polaroids of his adventures in the woods and what happens to him, such as the time when the Ku Klux Klan seems to be after him because his uncle said something that was leading to them to believe that he might be of their persuasion, I will say, or the time he's in the woods and there's a killer tornado, or the time he finds someone trying to take a shotgun to a bald eagle. All of this is written in very humorously, a look at of human life down in southern Indiana. And he also has a love interest with a woman named Lola who is on again and off again. It's a very entertaining book, very light, very easy to read. And I would recommend it.
And that's his debut novel?
Yeah. It's his debut novel.
And Brian Kimberling, Snapper.
Yeah, I would say this is interesting. It seems like we talk about genres and subgenres of crime fiction. That southern Indiana territory is becoming a really hot place because last time we were here, I talked about Frank Bill, who wrote Donnybrook, and his first book was also called Crimes of Southern Indiana.
Yes.
And he's ushered in, along with Don Pollock and others, this whole genre, subgenre of crime fiction called redneck noir, I think. I mean, that's an interesting, if you type redneck noir on Amazon, you'll get all these authors, Frank Bill, Don Pollock, now looks like Brian Kimberling might be getting into the mix here, but that's interesting how southern Indiana is becoming such a rife area.
And you're saying, too, it's not the touristy southern Indiana.
No, it's
brutal.
Not at all.
Brutal.
Yeah, just like the southern Ohio in Donald Ray Pollock's books. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, and what's interesting, too, I think, in terms of genre, is where place becomes as much a part of the plot and the characters. I mean, southern Indiana is almost a colorful character in this book, and you could certainly say that of Donald Ray Pollock. Mm-hmm. And maybe if we had Julia on the line too, I mean, Acker's Gap, and very much the color that comes into it and the place is very, very important to the story. Mm-hmm. And I think that in some books you see that kind of work that really can become a genre.
Yeah, writing about place, really writing and really sort of turning the magnifying glass on what that place really is to people who are from there. We have to take a break. We'll be back in about 90 seconds. This is All Sides Weekend Books. Don't go away.
On the next Fresh Air, neurologist Oliver Sacks talks about hallucinations and how they can be triggered by grief, trauma, brain injury, medications, and neurological disorders. And he'll tell us about his personal experimentation with hallucinogenic drugs in the 60s. His book, Hallucinations, is coming out in paperback. Join us.
Today at noon on 89.7 NPR News.
Support comes from ARC Industries, providing business solutions to Columbus's industrial, retail, and commercial markets, and helping people with disabilities find meaningful work. ARC Industries dedicated to the success of its customers, employees, and community. ARC Industries is online at arcind.com.
When you support 89.7 NPR News at the annual level of $85, our gift to you is the WOSU Public Media Member Card. The Member Card is good for dining and admission discounts at more than 200 Member Card partners in and around Central Ohio. Save money and support 89.7 NPR News with the WOSU Member Card. Make a gift of $85 or more. Visit us now at wosu.org/membercard for more information. 89.7 NPR News is your all-day NPR news station, bringing you news and information 7 days a week and always streaming at wosu.org.
We are back for All Sides Weekend Books. My guests, Kevin Griffith from Capital University and Cassie Rose, whose birthday this is today. And we have people waiting patiently on the phone. Dave from Columbus has a recommendation. Hello, Dave.
Hi. The writer I'd like to recommend is a guy from Amsterdam. He died. So the books are written in the 80s and the 90s. Jan Willem van de Wettering. He wrote the Amsterdam detective series. Things like The Japanese Corpse and The Main Massacre. They're fun books to read because Jan Willem was in a Buddhist monastery in Japan for a while before he became a crime writer. And so he brings a little bit of Buddhism to his stories that are kind of an interesting take on the detective novel and on solving crime.
Now that's interesting. Mm-hmm. That really is interesting. Dave, thank you for the recommendation. I appreciate that. People, you were talking, we were talking a bit off mic about really integrating where you're from or what you've experienced into a popular genre, which crime fiction is. And I think what he was saying was just an example of that, although Buddhist monastery crime fiction, well.
Who was the Catholic priest that was so popular
Greeley?
In the 60s?
Andrew
and 70s?
Greeley?
Andrew Greeley.
He just passed away a couple of years ago. Yeah.
And then there's another one who I turn to occasionally, although his stuff has gotten a little weaker over time, but Colin Cotterill, with a C, Cotterill, Colin Cotterill. All of his detective stories are set in Laos, which is fascinating to understand the culture there. They're set in communist Laos. Those are fascinating, like we said, to get a sense. That's why people read them, get a sense of the local color, the culture, the history. The plot is it's a murder mystery, so the plot's there. But that's what makes them so rich, and it's interesting, too. You don't think of Dutch fiction.
Yeah.
Interesting, though, and this is not a crime fiction, but the Pulitzer Prize winner in fiction this year, The Orphan Master's Son by Adam Johnson, is set in North Korea. Mm-hmm. And I was talking about this with someone. I'm going to be reading it with a book club. And someone said, how can you set a book in North Korea if you haven't been there and lived there? And I said, well, that's going to be very interesting. But, you know, you study very much about it. I mean, Mark Weingartner wrote the sequel to The Godfather, and he's not part of the mafia. So, but how do you know in North Korea the smells of the streets,
the
sounds?
Like being a method actor, you know, you have to put yourself there. We have a call from Yvonne in Bexley who's waiting patiently. Hello, Yvonne. Go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to recommend Attica Locke. She is an African-American mystery writer. I first heard about her on NPR. Her novel, The Cutting Season, I believe, came out last year. And it is about slavery, but it's a contemporary story about a mystery in a plantation that is now used for weddings and as a hotel. Oh. And there's a mystery that happens during slavery times, but there's also a murder of a Mexican worker in contemporary times. And she also has Blackwater Rising, which is her first novel, and that one deals with, like, the 70s and civil rights issues of the 70s that had to do with African Americans. So really interesting, as you guys are talking about, integrating life experience with mystery, because she integrates the experience of African Americans, creates a story. She doesn't have like a detective, but her characters function as a detective. They're not detectives. They're just normal people who get put into a situation where they have to investigate a murder, and so it's really interesting and different.
What's the title again?
The most recent one is called The Cutting Season.
And it's Attica Locke, right?
Attica Locke. So that's like A-T-T-I-C-A and Locke with an E.
Thank you so much for the recommendation.
Thank you.
Much
great
appreciated.
Program.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you so much. 292-8513 if you'd like to call in with a recommendation or ask a question of our panel. Cassie Rose, WOSU's book critic, and her blog is thelongestchapter.com. Anyone loving books needs to know this blog. Kevin Griffith is professor of creative writing, English, and all kinds of smart things at Capital University. He's also a poet. 292-8513. Kevin, what do you have for us?
Well, you just mentioned I'm a poet, and we often neglect poetry here, sometimes for good reason, but it takes a while for a good one to come out. But this is something wonderful. It's the summer, right? It's time to relax. And believe it or not, a new translation of Basho has just come out by David Young, who teaches at, or he's emeritus professor now at Oberlin, just come out. It's called Moon Woke Me Up Nine Times, Selected Haiku of Basho. That's my secret pleasure. I'm a big haiku fan. I thought I'd read just a couple of these. They're haikus, so they're very short. But it's wonderful to go back to haiku to just clear your mind. And we forget, Basho wrote in the 17th century. He was just sort of a bohemian wanderer, that kind of thing, sometimes a teacher. A very funny guy, though. Here's one of my favorite haikus from this collection. Ah, spring, spring, spring is so wonderful, etc. That's great.
A little subversive, yeah, actually. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. And another one was one insect asleep on a leaf can save your life. That's awesome, I think. And what's really nice is Young has a really good introduction to talk about the challenges of translating haiku and how when you do a translation that you can't always follow the 5-7-5 pattern if you want to have the compression of the original in English. So Moon Woke Me Up Nine Times, Selected Haiku of Basho. If you're looking for something to just find a little peace now and then or whatever, if you need to, I would highly recommend this book.
Good to know. Thank you very much for that. Relaxation and clearing the mind is always good. It's better for some of us than others, probably. We have a call from Annette in Reynoldsburg. Hello, Annette.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I am just becoming familiar with a British author, Stephen Robinson, and his main detective is actually a genealogist who goes back searching records to try to find out secrets that obviously then there are some people who don't want him to find those secrets out. And it's a really interesting way to roll genealogy into a detective series. It's very interesting. And the first book he has out is called In the Blood. And the second, I think he has a second one out that I haven't read yet.
How did you find this author?
I really don't. That's a good question, because it's been probably several months, and I've read a lot of stuff since then. So, you know what? I don't remember.
You don't know if you happened upon it in the library or if someone recommended it? Or
I think it almost had to be in the library.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've talked before about how, you know, something catches your eye on a display, which is why we have displays, and, you know, you may fall in love with a writer. That's happened to a lot of us. Maybe that happened to you, Annette.
It's the discovery process.
Thank you very much for the recommendation of Steve Robinson. We have Larry from Columbus who has a recommendation for us. Hello, Larry.
Hi. I just wanted to mention Philip Carr, K-E-R-R.
Okay.
He has written 8 books on a German homicide detective starting in 1931, and the 8 novels follow his career in Germany and escaping from Germany after the war. He's not a Nazi, but he was forced to join the SS, and he was there through most of it. It was a very interesting perspective on the inner workings of the German Reich. He's trying to maintain his morality while at the same time being asked by famous German characters to solve crimes for them. Very interesting. Also, Paul Bowles.
Oh, Sheltering Sky, sure, yeah.
Sheltering Sky. And let's see, there was one other I was saying. Oh, Patricia Highsmith. You can hardly mention mysteries without Patricia Highsmith.
Mm-hmm.
We got a lot of nods of recognition from our panel from that. Thank you so much, Larry, for your call. That's a name that comes up a lot, Patricia Highsmith.
Yes.
Talented Mr. Ripley, was
exactly.
that her?
Exactly.
Her
yeah, Strangers on a Train.
Right.
That
yeah.
one is
fantastic.
Very
good.
Didn't Hitchcock do that?
Twice, yeah, I yes. think. Yeah. He did it twice. Fantastic. I think he remade it as well. Mm-hmm. Yes, Patricia Highsmith, good to know. Jennifer from Columbus has some recommendation of children's books. Hello, Jennifer.
Yeah, actually, I have a complete set of the Bobbsey Twins series
that was given
to my grandmother when she had polio, and she gave it to me. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with them, but it's two sets of twins, like an older set of boy and girl and a younger set of boy and girl, and they solve mysteries together. I think that it came out around the time of... like the Nancy Drew, Hardy Boys mm-hmm. kind of stuff. Maybe it was a little bit earlier than that. I don't know if you guys have heard of it, but I was obsessed with them as a child.
The Bobbsey Twins, they were very, they're like classics mm-hmm. now. They were very popular back then.
It was them and the Hardy Boys and Nancy mm-hmm. Drew.
Right.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the Five Little Peppers and How They Grew. My grandmother had that series back then. Thank you so much, Jennifer. I appreciate that. You've taken us all back to a maybe happier, maybe not time.
I just was remembering Encyclopedia Brown, too. I used to love Encyclopedia Brown in terms of childhood mystery stories. Fantastic.
Yeah. Emil and the Detectives. I used to remember Emil and the Detectives.
Yes.
Yeah. And didn't Curious George solve mysteries? Mm-hmm. Or maybe
exactly.
Well, what about Harriet?
He created mysteries.
What about Harriet the Spy?
Yeah, remember that. Yeah, I don't think Dr. Seuss did mysteries, but anyway. 292-8513 is our call. Cassie, you have a...
Yes, I have. This is. I brought this book more to recommend the author than this book because it's not his best, but it's his most recent. It's Constance by Patrick McGrath. Patrick McGrath is known for his Gothic writing. In fact, he's really one of the best in that arena. And his earlier books are much better. But I'll say that Constance is good. It's about a woman in New York City who marries a man who is 20 years her senior. It's in the 1960s, and they live on the Upper West Side during the time when there were drunks and there was crime in the street and the whores before it became gentrified. So he creates that dark atmosphere on the Upper West Side of New York with that. And Constance is a little unstable, and that's the signature for Patrick McGrath. He always has one character who is maybe schizophrenic or has some mental instability, and she has some obsession about her bad relationship with her father. And that's really where I came a little negative on the book, and that I thought the theme of, you know, blame it on the parent was kind of ordinary. But it's still a very good book with Patrick McGrath's talent for creating that Gothic atmosphere, and you never know who you can trust because there are two narrators here with Constance and also with her husband.
It's like walking around at night in the Upper West Side today. It's still a little bit. It is gentrified to an extent, mm-hmm. but it's still New York at night. You know, in a residential area.
Right. And so I would recommend if anyone's new to Patrick McGrath that they don't pick up Constance first, but they read Spider.
Mm-hmm.
What's that about?
Who is Spider Clegg, who is a disturbed young man who moves into a neighborhood where he believes he witnessed his mother's murder. And it's really creepy. And the thing about Patrick McGrath, in real life, he grew up outside of an insane asylum, Broadmoor or something like that, in England, because his father was a psychiatrist or something. So he has all these stories. So anyway, Spider Clegg, I think was his name, is unearthing in many ways the death of his mother. But you can't trust him because he's schizophrenic. And there's this one scene. What he does is that every night for like 30 or 40 minutes, he crawls under the kitchen sink into the cupboard and closes the door. Mm-hmm. It's really creepy.
I remember that. That's right.
Very vivid scene that
I'd
has stayed with
disc
me.
I slip a disc. I tried to do that.
So it's that kind of creepiness that really engages you. Same with Asylum, Trauma, Dr. Haggerty's Disease, I think is another one.
Patrick McGrath.
Patrick McGrath.
That's the name.
Yes.
Right.
Very good author, I would think, to read on a hot summer day on a beach or on your porch, because it just that contrast.
While I have you both here, and y'all can listen in if you want to, you know that I sometimes will grab a book and read 10 pages a day. My latest one is An American Tragedy, Theodore Dreiser, because I wanted to stick to an American writer for the next coming up, which I'm fascinated by. I think I think this is really a great book, but I want to get into Faulkner. If I want to get into Faulkner, where do I start?
I would first go, what comes to mind is Absalom. I'm debating Absalom, or The Sound and the Fury.
Probably The Sound and the Fury, although I must say, I was just going to say that. I really admire you, because I do that too, because with all this, this detective fiction and everything that we read, you have to have a good meal now and then.
Well, that's
right?
My quiet time, you know.
Exactly. And I wanted to, not Faulkner, but certainly Faulkner's heir. Every summer I go back and read something by William Styron. I think William Styron is one of the forgotten, truly great writers of post-World War II America. He often gets lost with Philip Roth and Updike and the others. But I just finished reading. I read about 10 pages a day, just like you. The Confessions of Nat Turner, which is just
that.
A heartbreaking book. My goodness.
One of these books that everybody knows about but nobody reads.
You should read it. Forget all the issues. I mean, it was a highly charged book, and there was a lot of criticism of the book for his portrayal of race. Let's not even talk about that. But let's talk about, it's just a wonderfully written book. Anyone who wants to be a writer, again, go and read Styron and just study the way he articulates his sentences and the beautiful way he composes scenes. The last part of this book where Nat Turner is finally, engaging in this rebellion. Of course, we all know Nat Turner
started a slave rebellion.
One of the only two slave rebellions during slavery in America. But at the end, he has to kill. There's no way around it. He has to kill this young white woman, Margaret Whitehead, that he's befriended, and she shared poetry with him. And he kills her with a sword, and she's lying on the ground saying, I'm in such pain. I'm in such pain. Can you please, kill me? And he picks up a large branch and does so. And they, you remember earlier in the book, they watched as, they encountered while they were on a carriage a tortoise that was crossing the road that was injured, and he was trying to explain to her why he had to kill this tortoise because it was in such pain, and it just resonates at the end. And I can't recommend enough. We get caught up. It's summertime. Let's do beach reads. But please go back and read William Styron, Confessions of Nat Turner, or, of course, Sophie's Choice. That's when you really appreciate what the art of writing is all about.
Well, when you say the art of writing, he's choosing subjects or writing about very gruesome times.
Right.
But you have to keep reading it. You're just compelled to keep reading it. It doesn't bring you down. In fact, it's very exciting to read that stuff. But these are not happy stories.
Oh, no. They are excruciating stories about what it means to live, right?
Yeah. And to his talent as a writer, I read one time that he would craft a sentence and write a few and go back and rewrite those sentences. So he wasn't one to write, I'm going to write just 300 words. And maybe he did that, But one of the things that he said, he had to perfect each sentence as he was going along. And I always remembered that, because that would be so close to each sentence and its rhythm.
All on yellow pads.
And on that note, I do thank Kevin Griffith from Capital University, my regular, who is back with us now after a hiatus because he had the nerve to be teaching during the show. But he is back. Cassie Rose, happy birthday. WOSU's book critic, thelongestchapter.com. I want to also thank producer Michael DeBonis, associate producer Amy Jurevich, assistant producer Rachel Quimby, production assistants Karam Sheban, Sharon Clary, Letitia Wiggins, and Emmanuel Jochi. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is listener-supported WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, and streaming on the web at WOSU.org. 87 NPR News, your all-day news station, a service of WOSU Public Media.
Support comes from Thurber House Summer Literary Picnic Series, presenting Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and author Julia Keller, Wednesday evening, June 26th, on the Thurber House lawn. Keller will read from her first mystery novel, A Killing in the Hills. Tickets and more at thurberhouse.org.